Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, a talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network. Remember my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Well, I just enjoy the celebrity segment so much. People are looking to even pick up a celebrity show with me now because they enjoy the interviews with celebrities. But this guy wears two hats. He's a New York Times, Wall Street Journal best-selling author. And also, everyone knows him as Body by Jake, Jake Steinfeld. Jake, thanks for calling.
Neil, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing fantastic, and I remember we talked before on the show a couple months ago about the whole thing in PA with promoting the gyms and all that stuff, and you were going out there and talking about how important it is to be healthy and getting kids motivated, especially in Pennsylvania. But now we're going to talk about the book, Take a Shot. And it's quite interesting in a lot of ways, Jake. I was just really amazed by the fact of I never knew about a professional team, a professional league like this. So this is really interesting.
Well, thanks, man. First of all, I appreciate the support. You're doing a great job, and the interviews are always fun, and that's why, you know, I called in a second time because you're a good guy, Neil.
Thank you, and
thank you for being a part and promoting and talking about, you know, good nutrition and good health, especially when it comes to kids. And you know, I've been the chair of the National Foundation for Governors Fitness Councils now, going into my second year. I was chair of the Fitness Council in California for six under Arnold and one under Jerry Brown. And my simple mission was to put fitness centers in schools. You know, I wanted to give the schools the tools. And as I stated a million different times, Bill Gates has put computers in schools around the country, and Body by Jake's going to put fitness centers in schools around the country. And it's been really working beautifully. As you know, in Pennsylvania, we did four Live Positively fitness centers, and we're combing the country now. Massachusetts is next, and we're going to go to Georgia, Ohio, Delaware, and New Jersey are our next stops, and then we'll also have a stop in West Virginia.
Oh, wow.
So we're excited about 2013, and I couldn't do any of this stuff seeing that we don't take any taxpayer funding or government funding, because as I'm sure you know, most states have no dough for anything, let alone wanting to help kids, especially when it comes to physical fitness. And I'm a big believer in giving the schools the tools, as I mentioned. And it really has been great to partner with a company like a Coca-Cola, who stepped up big time, who understands how important it is, and are willing to stand side by side with me fighting childhood obesity and doing it in a very positive way that is tangible. Because as I've always said, you know, great thing about putting a fitness center in a school is that that gift really starts to give when we leave. And we're serving over 5 million workouts now a year with the fitness centers that we've been putting in, not only in California, but as I mentioned, in D.C., Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania, and these new states coming in 13. So that's been great. And, you know, the fitness has been a big part of my life. I think you know my story. I think I mentioned it to you the last time I was on. I was a fat kid with a bad stutter growing up, and my dad bought me a set of weights at 13, and it changed my life. And, you know, it not only did the weights build my confidence and self-esteem, as well as building my body, you know. And it was something that I just found and loved, and here I am. I'll be 55 in February, believe it or not, and feeling like I'm 22. and the entrepreneurial spirit has always been a part of me, and the fitness business has been great to me and has afforded me to do many things. I was the first guy to do personal fitness training and sort of made it an occupation, became famous by association, training people like, you know, Steven Spielberg and Harrison Ford and Priscilla Presley and Bette Midler and George Lucas and people like that in the early 80s. And then parlayed that into videos and books and television shows, a television network called Fit TV. Ted Turner gave me my start on television, really, doing the fitness break on Cable News Network back in the day. And when I had the opportunity and sold Fit TV, everybody in L.A. were buying minor league baseball teams. This was 1996, 97.
Okay.
I loved basketball growing up. I played basketball in high school. I played lacrosse in high school. I actually got into college because I played the game of lacrosse. I wasn't very good at it, though, and it was a cool game, and I actually left school after 3 months upstate New York because there was no such thing as professional lacrosse, and came to California to pursue bodybuilding, thank goodness. I did that because I'm a whole lot better bodybuilder than I ever was at the game of lacrosse. But here I was, life's about moments, Neil, and I sell Fit TV to Rupert Murdoch in 1997. And now all I'm thinking about is, man, wouldn't it be great to be able to buy an NBA team?
Definitely.
Now, I didn't have any background in sports marketing, and I kind of learned on the street. And as I said, famous by association, people like Steven Spielberg let me travel with them when I was training them, and was able to sit in meetings. It just became one big ear. I became a great listener, and I found that hanging with these people. They're really, Neil, no different than you and me. The only difference is they had a dream, and they never took no for an answer.
Exactly.
And that gave me all the incentive in the world to say to myself, I might never direct an ET, but I'm going to have my own success in life. And what's the worst that's going to happen to you? You go out there, you take a shot, you try to do something. If it doesn't work out, and most of the times it doesn't work out, but at least you took the shot. And here I am in L.A. now. Things are starting to progress. I sell this television network. I don't know about the sports business. I was doing a fitness magazine called Body by Jake with Hachette Filipacchi, the French publisher. And the story goes, and it all is documented in my new book, Take a Shot, which is so entitled, where I'm doing this publication, and a buddy of mine becomes the chief marketing officer at Ford. And, I'm a big believer. I read all kinds of magazines and newspaper articles. I'm talking back in the day. Now everything is online, but nice. I still love my magazines and newspapers, by the way. I'm sure there's a lot of your fans that do the same. I'm sure they're going, all right, Jake. Or they're going, oh, yeah, Jake. get with the times. But so I'm reading the story about my buddy Dave Ropes, who became the chief marketing officer at Ford. And I said, wow, I have this new magazine. I need some ad pages. Let me give him a call, which I did. And he was great. He was happy to hear from me. And I said, hey, buddy, I need some ad pages. Could you help me out? He goes, buddy, I've been in the job 5 days. And I go, and? I need some ad pages. So he goes, maybe give me a call in a couple of months. And I knew that I had my first issue was coming out in a couple of months, and I needed ad pages. So I said, what if I can deliver John Kennedy for you? Now, at the time, John Kennedy Jr. was doing a magazine called George.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Right? Uh-huh. And this was 1996, 97. So he says, you could deliver John Kennedy. I said, matter of fact, how about I deliver Ralph Lauren's son, David? Because David was doing a magazine called Swing at the time, right? He said, all right, you deliver those guys. You come to Detroit. I got some pages for you. I said, okay, great. And I had never met John Kennedy Jr. or David Lauren. What I did do is I called the publisher at Hachette Filipacchi. His name was David Becker, a great guy, bright guy, one of the brightest guys I'd ever met. I said, David, let me tell you what's going on. I got a buddy of mine. He's now the chief marketing officer at Ford. I can get some ad pages, but I got to deliver John Kennedy and David Lauren. And I need you to introduce me to them. He goes, no problem. He says, I'll get you to New York. Come to New York. We can all hang out, and then we'll go to Detroit.
Jake, one thing I would say, it's all about relationships and connections, isn't it? That's how you make it. It seems like what you did.
You know what? My life is always built upon relationships. But most importantly, Neil, honest relationships. You got to be straight with people. I'm a father of four kids. You remember when you were a kid? You did something wrong. You try to cover it up. You kind of learn with age that you get in trouble. You get in worse trouble, not for the deed you did, but the cover-up that you try to pull off. And I'm a big believer in just being straight with people. Just be honest. If you tell people what it is you want to do, who you want to do it with and how you want to get it done, you usually get a pretty direct answer. Hey, I'm in, or not for me, or hey, I like it, but let's try to figure it out.
Yes, exactly.
And that's how I've lived my life. So you're right. It's always about relationships. So here I was with my two new friends, Ralph's son, David Laurent, and John Kennedy Jr. And we're in Detroit. We spent 3 days there, and we had a ball. And as a matter of fact, on the plane right back to Los Angeles, we each switched magazines. You know, I gave the boys a copy of Body By, and the fellas gave me copies of their publication, Swing and George. And they went back to New York, and I went back to L.A. And on the plane ride home, 1998, right? It's the beginning of May, 1998. I'm opening up this magazine called Swing. And if you remember, maybe you don't, it was a magazine for kids in their 20s. You know, a real kind of a hipster magazine. You know, what's hot and all those different things. And I open up the magazine, flying back from Detroit to Los Angeles, and I open it up to a page, and there is a guy holding a lacrosse stick.
Oh, wow.
And I said, wait a second, I played this game in high school. I've been in California now 20 years, right? I got here in 1977.
Okay.
1997, almost 90. It's 1998, right?
Right.
No one's playing the game. Well, I start reading the story about this kid named Dave Morrow. Started a company called Warrior Lacrosse in his dorm room at Princeton. And what got me excited was not the fact that he was a champion lacrosse player, but what he was doing to the sport. He was making lacrosse a lifestyle. I said, this guy is onto something. And like what I usually do as an entrepreneur, I don't know about you, Neil, I call it dialing for dollars. And I got back to L.A. all pumped up. Called David Lauren and I said, buddy, I just read a great story in your magazine about this kid named Dave Morrow. Can I get a phone number on him? And he called the writer and said, no problem. I got a phone number for Dave Morrow, picked up the phone the next day, got Dave on the phone. There's a funny story in the book, Take a Shot, of how it all goes down. But I asked him a simple question. Is there such a thing as professional outdoor lacrosse? And he said, no. And I said, well, there is now. And that was literally May 1998. Neil, if I could tell you that Dave Morrow and I, to this day, have never had a written down deal together, it was all done in a handshake. The story of Take a Shot, it's written by both of us, Dave Morrow and myself. It tells the story in a novelized fashion. This is not a how-to book. This is not a business book. Because if it was, then all you'd read about is failure after failure, which is a good thing, and comedy, because, you know, you got to laugh at yourself. But we tell the story as if we were sitting at a party and you came over and I said, hey, Neil, sit down here. We got this great story about how we founded Major League Lacrosse, and then we start telling stories.
Oh, wow.
And the book has been so well received. Take a Shot has been so well received. It's doing gangbusters. Obviously, you can go to your local bookstores, but on Amazon. How we document it is we open up with our championship game last year, not this past one, but the summer before, where we literally played in Hurricane Irene.
Oh, my.
Okay, we played where up and down the Eastern Seaboard, the President of the United States told people, don't go out. They shut down. Bloomberg, everybody. We played in Annapolis, Maryland.
Oh, my.
At Navy Marine Stadium, a privately owned facility, obviously, right?
Right.
The mayor of Annapolis shut the city down, almost evacuated it. I called up my friend John Skipper, who runs ESPN, a great man, and told him, I said, look, we can't cancel this game. You know, if we cancel it, it'll be an asterisk because you're not going to – we're not the Super Bowl yet. We're not the NFL, right? If we cancel, we're done. And our players, remember, just like the players of old days of baseball and basketball and many of the professional leagues, in the beginnings of their incubation, most players had second jobs, just like our players do now. And they would have to get back to work on a Monday. So we needed to play on Tuesday. So we needed to play.
Right, exactly.
So ESPN said, okay, Jake, we're with you. If you play, we're going to shoot the game. And Navy Marine Stadium said, if you guys are nuts enough, we'll let you play. And obviously, we made sure there was no lightning and thunder. There were 70-mile-an-hour winds and rain, and the games went off the most amazing lacrosse you've ever seen. And at the end of the day, we ended up playing. The next game was our championship, which was beautifully sunny. And I basically, you know, how the NFL had the Ice Bowl, the MLL now has the Hurricane Games. And we open the book telling that part of the story, but then we go back to how it all started in 1998. And we tell the story from 1998, how we put this idea together with a couple of fellas. And through 2001, through 9/11, and all, this league should have never have been. Major League Lacrosse should have never, forget have gotten out of the gate, but never have gotten off the schneid after a summer showcase. And then a season one where we were broke at the end of the first season. And we had a meeting, and I'll give you this, and I'll stop talking about it, but in Take a Shot, we talk about, we had a meeting planned with a potential investor who was willing to write a big check. Neil, straight up, in the book, 9/11, right, September 11th.
Yes.
September 11th, 2001, right, we had a call set up at 8:30 a.m. East Coast time. And I don't have to tell you what happened.
Yes. Oh, that's...
Okay. So the fact of the matter that here we are going into our 13th season for Major League Lacrosse.
That's
the sport
great,
of lacrosse is the fastest growing game in the country. At any given moment, you know, I just saw a great movie by a buddy of mine called Lincoln last night with my wife. It was around 24th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Beautiful. Thank you. A nice dinner. And my kids say, go out, Dad. Take mommy out. You know, when they say that, I get nervous. And we saw Lincoln. First of all, the movie's unbelievable. And the performances are crazy, great. But to understand what Lincoln went through to get what he had to get done, just makes you understand how, well, business works, how life works. Relationships, Neil, you said it. And it's the belief in one another. And if you have a passion for something, you can get something done, whatever it is you want to do.
It's true.
And it may not be today, it may not be tomorrow, it may not end up the way you intended it.
Right.
But if you push hard and stay in the game long enough, you will win. And with Major League Lacrosse, at any given moment from those early days, from 98 to 2001, everybody tried to put wedges in between me and Dave Morrow, but nobody could because of the relationship that we had. So the book is really based upon, as the subtitle says, it's a remarkable story of perseverance, friendship, and a really crazy adventure. And that's it in a nutshell. And a dear friend of mine named Steve Tisch, you know, he owns the New York Giants, and he won the Academy Award for producing Forrest Gump. We have a bunch of quotes of guys who have read it and loved it. We put his on the front of the book because it's just so kick-ass, man. He says, Take a Shot is a fast and furious ride. It's Moneyball meets The Hangover.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and that kind of tells you in a nutshell.
Well, Jake, what I gather from the book is, I guess, there's a lot of themes involved. One, I guess, is that, like you said, you're such a motivational speaker in the way that you motivate people to be successful. You're making me want to go out there and continue to persevere because you just never know what road, but you have to create those relationships and go for it, and you're going to fall at times. And it sounds like in this book you fell, but you finally kept going and created relationships and friendship, and it was a crazy ride, and that's what life's about unless you are afraid to take risks.
Well, I tell you what, that is beautifully said, Neil, and if you know what, man, life's about moments, and there's a poem that I live by. It's called Don't Quit. I trademarked the words. I own the words Don't Quit, believe it or not. I got cut from my 8th grade basketball team. True story. And I was devastated. It was the first time I put myself out there.
Oh, wow.
You know, a legend in my own shower, as I say. And I got cut from this team. I was embarrassed and devastated. A girl that I knew gave me a poem called Don't Quit. And I have the poem, literally, the plaque on my desk right now to this day. I trademarked the words "Don't quit." There are two lines in this poem. It's "stick to the fight when you're hardest hit. It's when things seem worst that you must not quit."
Yeah.
And the other line is, "success is failure turned inside out." If you think about it, you know, you never know how close you are, right?
Yes.
Because if you stop, you never want to live with, "if I would have given it one more minute, if I would have stayed in the game two more hours, if I would have given this business idea six more months."
Right, exactly. And those, right? are the ones that are successful.
That's right. And the thing is, if you believe and you have a passion, sometimes you got to be a man on your own island. But I will tell you that in the book Take a Shot, you see very few, the highs that Dave and I have, Dave Morrow and I have, are just from the relationship and the friendship that we built. The lows were very low.
I'm sure.
And, you know, it's really when you're in the deepest, darkest ditch, my friend, that you really find out what kind of character you have and what you're made up of and who your real friends are. And you really see that. And it's really amazing that I've been through a lot of battles business-wise, and none more than with Major League Lacrosse. And I didn't know Dave Morrow before that magazine article in 1998. And today, I count him in as family. He's my best friend in the world.
Right. I mean, Jake, just again, what you're able to do in your public speaking, being able to motivate people, the success you had in your businesses, you see that thing from being cut in eighth grade. And I think that people that read this book are going to find out about it. And I guess the story is you got to find out about the story of what's going on with the lacrosse league now and your relationship with Dave and all these different things. And to learn about, I guess, the whole thing about the crazy adventure. I kind of posted my Facebook, my crazy days of interviewing celebrities, and I'm doing an education talk show, Jake, but I took the shot to say, hey, I'm going to start bringing celebrities on and interview them about books, about their foundations, and no one else in education is doing that. And I think that it's a great opportunity, so we'll see where I go, but I'm going to have that passion and go after it. And I think that you really speak to me in a way to say, keep on going and don't give up.
Hey, listen, the bottom line is don't quit on you, buddy boy, and that's really the name of the game. Stay in the keep the uniform on, as I say, you know, train, keep doing what you're doing, because you never know when they're going to put you in the game. You always got to be prepared and be ready. And for anyone who, you know, wants to be inspired and laugh, when you're reading a book, it's a very fast read. You know that, Neil. You don't have to be a lacrosse lover. This doesn't document year in and year out from first season to 13th season. It's not written that way. It's written as a novel. It's a crazy fun story. It's a great gift for the holidays. And I think once you read it, you'll be revved and ready for 2013.
And that's key, because if you're revved and ready for 2013, especially with this economy and we don't know where our country's going, it's up to us. It's up to us to pick up and go for it and take
a shot.
So where can we purchase the book, Jake, and learn more about you?
Hey, buddy, you know what? You can go anywhere, any bookstores, but BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon has the book. And go right now and get it. So, you know, you put it under that Christmas tree, you put it under the Hanukkah menorah, and I promise you, you will love reading it. Your family will love reading it. If you have if you're a mom or a dad and your kids are playing the sport, or they're in business school or thinking about starting a business, or if you're listening right now and you're not happy where you are in your life, you need something to get you pumped up, get you motivated, it's time to take a shot.
And do you have any other projects coming up right now, Jake?
Oh, my goodness. You know, we've got so much going on, thank goodness gracious. We have a great platform called Fit Orbit. It's a web platform where we connect the consumer to a real live personal trainer online or a mobile device. And it is a really exciting platform. It's fitorbit.com, where we're connecting a real live personal trainer with you in the privacy of your own home. It has been going gangbusters. We just brought in WellPoint as a financial partner, which is really exciting for me. It kind of legitimizes what we've built. And my goal has always been to be able to connect your doctor to a trainer and a nutritionist to you. So you have your own team that now if your doc says your cholesterol's up a little bit, Neil, you got to lose a bit of weight, instead of you going, okay, what do I do? And he just goes, go take a walk. Now he could turn you on to a real live personal trainer that we have at Fit Orbit, where there's no other platform on the planet that offers this.
Oh,
a lot of people talk about personal training online. It's usually a computer generated program, but that's super exciting. And if you can go to bodybyjake.com and just check things out, from products to new music label, and you gotta keep rocking and rolling, Neil. Gotta keep it fun.
It seems like you always want to come up with some other business idea, so you keep that brain going and moving and moving and come up with other ideas, because we need entrepreneurs like you to keep things going and keep things exciting. And I definitely am going to look at you as definitely a role model to model after, to try to make sure I can go out and be a successful entrepreneur like you have been. So thanks again for calling, Jake.
Hey, Neil, thank you, and good luck with the show. You do a great job, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
You listen to Total Education Spotlight Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. And I'm just really excited always for the celebrity segment, but especially with a celebrity show now. But when you have an athlete with such great success, and I don't think I've interviewed many gold medalists before, but especially when I was watching the 2012 Olympics in London, and it was the first Olympics that truly I was just blown away by. I was excited. So I want to welcome the program, Jenaba Tarmo. Jenaba, thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm ready for a break, as I think all of us are, coming into the holidays. It's been just a crazy
year. Yeah.
I'm ready for 2013 and then, you know, kind of lay back and say, oh, let's look back at 2012. What a crazy ride it has been. But for you, it has been even more, with the honor of getting a gold medal in the Olympics. I'm sure you never dreamed that this was going to happen, did you?
Yes, it's actually been a great honor. It's been a very exciting year, one I probably will never forget. We can definitely say that.
And it's not over yet, right? You can still. Are you going to compete in 2016? Are you hoping to, or is it? Do you have thoughts of that?
Yes, my plan is to compete for as long as I can until my legs can't run anymore.
That's fantastic. So our topic today, especially being an education talk show, is the importance of education for you and how to kind of, after your celebrity status, after winning the gold medal, how you're able to go back to the communities and talk to people about the importance of education. Tell me why education is so important to you.
Well, honestly, without education, it's going to be hard for you to accomplish anything. And your knowledge and power, knowledge is power. So that's something that will never, ever be taken away from you, no matter how hard anybody tries. My motto is I love to learn. So if ever I know something new and I can spread an important fact, I'm always willing to do that.
I agree. I think it's something where once you can't accomplish things as an athlete, I don't care what anyone says, without an education, because if your grades aren't good, you're not going to play. And especially,
yeah.
Sometimes that won't happen, but then in life, especially as an athlete, your life's short-lived. It's not that your entire career is going to be in sports, so you always have to have that backup.
Always have to have that backup. Very true.
And I think that's one thing that I see a lot of times with athletes. Now I'm seeing, at least coming on my show, is they really have this focus. They have this intention to say, you know what, after I've had the success, I'm going to go out and talk to people, tell them the importance of education, because you wouldn't have been able to graduate from college or anything if you didn't focus on your education. So did your family really make it a big emphasis in your life?
Oh, yes. Education has always been a huge emphasis in life. My mom, I remember when I was, I think, in the sixth grade, my older sister had probably just graduated high school, and my mom told me to make a promise that once I graduate high school, I'm going straight into college, you know? So once I graduated, I didn't even think about going into a junior community college. I went straight into a four-year institution, and that was just my goal.
And I that's great because, again, the focus, it was there. That so when you got home during – and this is a great conversation because I really want to talk to more celebrities and athletes about this is, you know – your family, they really saw the importance of this. So when you got home from school, especially when you're, let's say, elementary school, you're like, oh, do I really have to do homework? Or were you really a focused person when you got home to do it?
I wasn't too focused. My mom kind of had to go a little bit harder on me. She enrolled me into homework center. So after school in elementary school, I'd go to homework center and try to complete as much homework as possible. And then a lot of times on the weekdays, my mom said that we weren't allowed to watch TV. So there's nothing else to do but read and do your homework at home. So we'd come home, do our homework, and then my older sister would go a little easy on us and say, okay, you can watch a little bit of TV, but you have to also read a book and write a book report every 2 weeks. So my mom was really strict on us when it came to our education. I didn't like it, but then I think I was such a disciplined child when it came to my mom that I still did, no matter everything she said, no matter what it was.
So once you started competing in track, did that focus in education get more really focused on your books because of just, again, kind of juggling both of those two things? It's you saw because your parents really pushed that importance of education?
Yes, most definitely. I think by the time I got to college, it was kind of already instilled in me being a student athlete. So it was a little bit hard, but then it was such a high priority that I always had to get my work and I always had to stay in class and listen, and I always had to ask questions if I didn't know. So being a student was very, very important, and not only just a student, but also a disciplined student.
Yeah, and to be disciplined, that's the big thing. And I think that especially when you compete at this high level where you were able to compete in college and then also in the Olympics, that you saw that, you know what, I had that instilled in me, and I'm not going to let anyone take this away, so I'm going to work as hard as possible on my studies as much as on the field, because the bottom line is this, that as an athlete, when you compete, you want to compete even in education. And I remember this so much when I was a student athlete in basketball. I wanted to get the best grades possible, maybe not because of wanting to learn, because I was, you know, not thinking that at that time, but I just wanted to compete with the rest of the students the same way I competed on the basketball court as you did on during track and field, correct?
Exactly. Very true, yes.
And you saw that's something that, you know, that I'm there for. So I guess what was your major in college? What did you major in, it, by the way?
I majored in psychology. I got a BS in psychology.
Is that why, again, you have a focus on education? Are you looking to, through that psychology major, go back and help kids in the community down the line? Is that a goal of yours?
That's one thing. I've always been interested in psychology. I don't know what it was, but I've just always been interested in psychology. But what I really want to do with my degree is get an emphasis probably in educational psychology so I can – I plan on starting a foundation in West Africa, Sierra Leone, where my family is from. And this foundation is pretty much helping or funding kids with a scholarship so they can go to school and stay off the street. So with the educational psychology background, I can know exactly how kids learn better and more effectively.
I think that's great. I think that's a fantastic thing because of knowing that. And that's an aspiration of yours. So basically, if you wouldn't have gone to school and got a degree, you wouldn't be able to go and say, now I'm going to take this to a foundational level. Because the fact is, when you have your own foundation, there's so much business involved in it, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. There's so much business involved. There's a lot of things that you don't know at all. And I think school is, like, a lot of people think that school is just work, math, science, and everything that has to do with those subjects. But there's a whole lot more to school that people don't really notice that they have instilled in their life. With me, it's a lot of discipline and respect and time management, you know. I learned a lot of math, but I also learned how to manage my time, you know. I learned how to be disciplined with my schoolwork, you know. So school is not just about learning academics, but learning life situations.
Definitely. And learning life situations, learning when you're going to fall at times. You're going to have subjects that you don't love completely. Like my wife doesn't like math, and I'm not a huge fan of writing. I love to talk, Jennifer, but writing, I wish I could hire someone to do it. It's like, it's a painstaking
yes.
thing, you know, and someday my business, I will be able to do that because one of my clients has their own professional writer that writes all their blogs for them, and then they just tweet them. So that'll be someday hope, and that's what's so great about publicists is they're able to help you out in a lot of ways to kind of toot your horn when you might have your expertise in something else. You're very yes. social, you're willing to talk, you're willing to give us your feelings and your passion, but yet when we have to kind of explain things without talking, it's like, oh, and that's one thing I always look at is trying to improve in areas that I'm not the greatest in, and then to keep on improving, mm-hmm. and then if we can look at our weaknesses, we're going to be successful in life because you're going to have those same weaknesses in your foundation. You're going to see, oh, I really wanted to do this. I really, you know, the fundraisers, all the different things. So you have to be a team to get it to be successful, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
And it's something that you just really say, okay, I didn't know your background. So your family's from West Africa. So when did you come to the States? Were you born in the States or how did that work?
I was born in the States. My younger sister and I are the only ones in my family that were born in the States. Everybody else is born in Sierra Leone and then migrated to America.
Very, very interesting. So you have a passion for the people there and seeing it. And is education really far, far behind what the United States is doing in education, would you say, in West Africa, if you're saying with your foundation and what you want to try to do?
When I was there, it's not the fact that it's far behind. It's just the fact that people can't really afford it. So if you can't afford it, then there's a lot of people left on the streets. And when they're on the streets, they're not doing anything effective for themselves. The women are prostituting and the men are just becoming gangsters and whatnot. So education is not behind. It's just lack of funding for it.
Larger class sizes. I remember talking to someone that was an ambassador from Nigeria that was telling me about that. That, you know, that the mm-hmm. funding is just not there, and that you have larger class sizes. Education is a very important thing in Africa, but the fact of the matter is the problem is that you don't have enough money. And so your foundation's hope is to really get more kids to graduate and go on to college. And are you going to be able to try to do talks out there as well down the line in your foundation to kind of talk to the kids about the importance of college?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm going to talk to them about the importance of education in general. What I have noticed is that a lot of kids do want to go to school. I hear my mom, a lot of family members are calling my mom and begging for money for tuition fees. You know, I really want to go to school. Can you get me some uniforms? Can you get me some books? So the passion for education is already there. It's just the lack of it.
Yes. I understand what you're saying, the lack of it, and you're doing such great things. Do you have any other projects you're currently doing with the idea of the foundation? I know it's so real. You're still training, as I know. There are events coming up pretty soon, aren't there, for you sports-wise as well, right?
Yeah.
So when are the next competitions for you?
I have a lot of competitions. I'm probably going to speak with my agent and my coach within the next 2 days and figure out where I'm competing next and what events I'm going to be doing. But right now for this 2013 year, my main goal is to be on the world championship team.
All right. Well, we'll definitely have to have you back and hear about that. And I guess for your career, does your coaches believe that you can definitely compete in 2016, that you have the shot to be in Brazil in 2016? What are their thoughts?
They think I have a pretty good shot.
Hey, but it's all up to you because I remember talking to Debbie Ferguson and how many years she was able to still compete in the Olympics and learned so much from our conversation and saying, well, you know, her age didn't matter. She just kept persevering. People said, I'm not going to be able to do it. So after your success with the gold medal now, what is your ultimate goal Olympic-wise? Do you want to get more than one gold medal in the next Olympics? Or is that one of your major goals? Like when you sit down and say, this is what I truly want to accomplish in the next, 4 years before 2016. World championships is your focus right now, right?
Yeah. Within the next 4 years, though, I do want to accomplish more. I'm a very ambitious person. and I want to run faster. I want to get more medals, and I just want to stay at the top, but not only just be at the top because I'm getting medals, but because I want to be able to influence someone in a positive way.
I think that's tremendous, and I think that you're a very driven person, and you have a lot of ideas and aspirations. So the foundation, when are you hoping it's going to launch? 2013, are you hoping to get things rolling? What are you seeing timeline-wise by that for that?
Oh, yeah. By 2013, hopefully fall of 2013, it can be launched and fully started, because I really want these kids to be educated and stay in school.
Well, we can definitely do interviews, and I'll have to talk to your agent about doing interviews in Africa when you go out there, because we'll do them via Skype. I did an interview with someone in Haiti a couple days ago. So internationally, all you do is go ahead and use Skype or whatever, and we can kind of talk to people. Really, I want to. Being in an international talk show like I have, especially heard in the UK or heard in Canada, I really want to help internationally education, not just the United States. And that's my passion about it, is that we're global. We need everyone to be educated. And education is such an important
thing. We need the world.
So, Jenna, where can we find more information on you and learn more about what you do?
All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, do you have your Twitter? Is that where we can find more info on you, Jenna?
Oh, where can you find more?
Yeah, where? Yes.
Yeah, you can go on Twitter, Jenna Sylvia, and then you can also go on Facebook, Jenna Tarmo, and as of now, that's it.
See, I'm going to be honest with you. I have a website. I never update it, but I'm so active on my Twitter and my Facebook. So I wonder.
Yes,
I wonder.
That's all you need.
It's true. You truly do. I bet you this is going to. I bet you how long websites, because websites are so complex and yet they take forever to update. You got to have millions of dollars to keep it going all the time and the time, which neither of us have. But I appreciate you taking the time. I wish you all the luck. In your ventures, and definitely love to have you back on, especially when the foundation's rolling, and if you're going out and doing talks in Africa to talk to people, educators, talk to people that you're kind of teaming up with the foundation, so we can really get a good word out for it and get people to donate and help. So thanks again for calling.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. You take care now. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net, for more information. And I always enjoy the celebrity segment. Now having a celebrity show, it's even more fun. So I want to welcome to the program Tana Frederick. You are celebrity actress and much, much more. Tana, thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you again. We talked about Save Our Surf last time. Now I want to go into Project Cornlight and then a little bit more about what's going on with the movie since the premiere. So let's go to Project Cornlight first.
Great. Project Cornlight is something that I thought was necessary. I thought we needed something that the state of Iowa and the states in the Midwest needed something to sort of boost them up, to give them some sort of structure in which to film movies, independent films. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of times I think that people believe between the East Coast and the West Coast that there are no films being made. I mean, I understand that production crews will go out to somewhere in the middle, in between there, and they'll shoot there because it's cheaper and it's a good location. But other than that, I don't think that there are, that people really understand who are there, that they can be making, like, amazing films right now from, you know, small town Iowa, and be competing on a global scale, because the technology that we have now is so incredibly inexpensive. I mean, we didn't have the same technology 10 years ago that we have now to make, be your own indie film director, producer, editor. And you kind of have to wear all those hats right now in order to get a film made when you're not making $5 million to $130 million budget, you know, movies. So,
yes.
So Project Cornlight is it's designed to be a queue of films that is mostly is mostly filmed by Iowans, written by Iowans, and so crewed by Iowans, acted by Iowans, written by Iowans. The first, we just completed our first project, which was called The Farm, and we filmed it in Iowa near my hometown, and actually on my great-grandparents' farm. We was part of the location, which was so cool, and I knew so many people involved. So many people put their hands out and helped us. It was an unforgettable experience, unforgettable. It's nothing like, it was nothing like shooting in Los Angeles where people see film crews all over every day. Everybody was so gracious and excited. And I think they're excited to be at a time where arts are being cut, you know, from the budget. I think they're excited to be seeing independent sources encouraging art to be continued to be created in smaller towns, and especially wonderful places like Iowa, where the people are so inventive and articulate and knowledgeable and very just great brains in Iowa, great brains. And I'm sure that's true of Nebraska and Wisconsin and Illinois. And so we shot our first film, and it went wonderfully. It's going to be premiering in October 2013 at a theater that actually, in Garner, Iowa. Garner, Iowa is a smaller town in Iowa, and they are actually building a theater. It's kind of been this wonderful pay it forward experience because from shooting the movie there, Garner, Iowa is resurrecting an independent movie theater, which blows my mind because it's a population of, I think, maybe 5,000, maybe probably less. And they're constructing an independent movie theater specifically for us to be showing The Farm at, to premiere it at in next October. And there's, if you know Iowa, or if you're anywhere in the Midwest, there's maybe three art house films, maybe one in Des Moines and one in Iowa City. And there are definitely not any, or very many in Northern Iowa. So you have to drive up to Minneapolis to see indie films. Well, now it's you know, I'm just out there to saturate the market with Iowa films and films made by Midwesterners who taught me my creativity and my work ethic and my work drive and were exceptionally supportive and responsible for me moving out to Los Angeles and going after a dream, you know, that's a very difficult one. I just want to saturate the market with films being made by those people who I really believe in and who are lovely and wonderful. So we are getting ready to film our second film, which is written by another Iowan, and we're shooting in another part of the state in Des Moines starting in June. And the actors, and it's fun because we brought out Tom Bauer from the Waltons, and he played my grandfather. Now his grandfather was born in Iowa. So some of the stars that we're bringing in are the leads for these films that have Iowa ties.
Oh, that's
great. And yeah, it's really neat. They spent their childhood growing up in Iowa. So they have very fond, specific memories of Iowa. And then Joel West is an actor / Calvin Klein model that started out one of those crazy modeling careers at 17, and he's from Iowa, Independence, Iowa. And he was the leading man in that film. And then the rest was all cast really with Iowan talent, Iowan local talent.
It sounds so interesting, Tana, because I think that what you're able to do is from your success, come back and say, I want to help people create success so that they someday can make it to Hollywood. They someday could be successful. And when you live that far out, a lot of times you're forgotten to be discovered. So now you're providing a platform for them to get the opportunity to produce, write, direct, act in a film in Iowa that Hollywood will finally see, and then there's an opportunity, right?
I mean, it's really very selfish on my behalf because I don't experience this kind of, granted, there's wonderful people out in Los Angeles, but their work schedules are filled with back-to-back-to-back films, and there are films being made in the Midwest and commercials and so on and so forth, but with this feature, I experienced the most ridiculously focused, amazing crew working under insane weather conditions. I mean, we shot for 2 weeks when it was 105 degrees in August, and it was crazy. And but the focus and the attitude of these of my crew was absolutely stunning. And so, and the, like I said, it's locations that you can't get anywhere else, and people are just so appreciative that we're there. It's not like you have, I mean, we shot at a nursing home at Prairie View Nursing Home in Garner, Iowa, and everybody was so excited we were there. And a lot of them knew, a lot of the people, the residents had their children, their grandchildren are in my grade, and so they were very cooperative. Whereas if you shoot in Los Angeles, you kind of get a okay, 5 more minutes, now get out of here. You know, but these people were talking to the crew and asking about it and asking about the plot, and it's like people really care and people are really investing themselves. And when you have that, when you have entire communities investing themselves in a feature film, I don't care if it's $5,000 or $5 million, it's going to have the home field advantage, you know, and for sure. And so this is what that film has to it. It has home field advantage because all these people are people who I grew up with and love, and I know are supporters of the art. So it was absolutely, it's just, I mean, it's beyond amazing.
So has the response been pretty good with the first film that came out from shooting with Project Cornlight? Have you been pleased with the response, I guess, nationally?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, I've gotten cards. I've gotten letters. I've gotten, like, anonymous cards that really move me from people who just say, thank you so much for bringing what you're bringing to the community. Local newspapers have supported us and written stories about us. And when I say local, I mean local for Iowa is still covering the Globe Gazette, which covers a greater part of North Iowa. So, you know, they covered the entire film shoot, and I think that inspiring other states around us to, and it's inspiring the entire state to feel like, okay, we count. We're a part of the, you know, filmmaking, and let's get geared up for the next film that's coming through. And we're beginning casting for that in 2 weeks. So it's lovely. The response has been wonderful.
Well, I'll have to, once you film on location in Iowa or any of your places, we need to do interviews and get some of the other actors or actresses on the program to talk to them with you on the line.
I would love that.
I'm telling you.
That would be great. I'm sure Tom Bauer would love to talk about his experience. You know, he's a journeyman actor who's been on Die Hard, Walton's, and his roots are in Iowa. And so he had a wonderful time. Everybody who I talked to just was kind of blown away. And it was a very, and people are planning on now about buying summer homes there or moving there. It's really interesting.
So I'll have to talk to your agent and say, here's what we're planning. We plan it on the radio. That's what's the fun thing when you talk to me. We just have a conversation. Now the movie, because again, this is a celebrity show, but educating people, I guess, in promoting things, especially, do you consider this one of your biggest roles, the movie that just came out with Judd Nelson and everything, would you say?
I wouldn't say I've been lucky enough to been holding leads in the last 6 films of Henry Jaglom, which is really fantastic considering I'm a theater-based actress who, like I said, when I grew up in Iowa, didn't have access to film. You know, the film program at University of Iowa was, there maybe 5 people in the film program, and I had no idea where the department was located or anything. So Henry gave me an opportunity to kind of come out of the gates with a lot of great people: Karen Black, David Provol, Justin Kirk from Weeds, and a ton of amazing actors. Zach Norman, his whole sort of stable of actors, and do some great work with them, and hold my own as a 25-year-old against all of these actors. I was 25 or 24. I hold my own against these actors who had been in the business forever and who are legends. So what I like about 45 Minutes from Broadway, is that it's the most collaborative piece that I've done with Henry, because it's really it's based on a family, a Yiddish theater family, where one of the daughters is really into acting, and the other daughter that comes and visits is completely into real estate. And so that duality of actors and thespians versus versus real people, or civilians, as we call them in the movie, that sort of duality is very fun to play with, just because it's sort of an uncommon plot to have a whole family of actors, the normal person coming into the family. There's a lot of films, I think, where everybody's normal and then the actor comes into the family, but this family is abhorred by the idea of somebody sell their daughter selling real estate, because it's been a generational theater family. So,
oh wow, yeah.
But it really required a lot of. We ran it on stage for a year, and so the kind of camaraderie and that you get from living and breathing and being with this family through the rehearsal process and different houses and the audiences and their responses, and when we were with a show for a year, they become family. So by the time we filmed it, after we had run the show, it really become a real family, for better or for worse. You know, we were a little squabbled here and there, but so is with any family. And so it really relied, 45 minutes really relied on this family cohesiveness and the reality of that group of actors I worked with being acting as a family. And so the collaboration was really nice, was really, really lovely with that. Before a lot of Henry's other films, I've been with Noah Wiley, great leading actors, just finished up a movie called The M Word, which is actually about menstruation, menopause, and men, which is one of Henry's I'm really excited about, because there's not a lot of information there, or there's not a lot of comedy there about menopause, and it's a lighthearted comedy, if you can believe it. But that's with leading man Michael Imperioli and Francis Fisher, but with 45 minutes from Broadway, David Proval and Jack Keller, who's a brilliant actor, Diane Salinger, Fred Nelson, Julie Davis, and it's basically, and Harriet Schock, and it's basically seven actors, just basically us, and we were out filming at this cabin that is this rare broken down home for weeks, and that's really nice. It was really intimate and really provided a setting for the collaboration, like I said, and for the familial setting.
Very good. And how's the response been with the movie since it's come out?
It's been great. I mean, it's probably my favorite film I've done with Henry so far. And then people really moved by it. People are very, I think it really touches a lot of people, because economically this family haven't become stars. They haven't, it's difficult for them to pay their mortgage on their house, which it's a family that's very down and out, yet not down and out, spiritually, emotionally, self-conscious, physically, and so I think in these times when a lot of people are unemployed, yet they all have dreams that they're going after, whatever those dreams are, it's important to keep that fight of whether or not you become president of the United States or you become president of PTA. What you went after is admirable and beautiful, and pat yourself on the back for that. You know, we're such a pushy, rushed culture that we don't give ourselves credit. And when I'm saying this, I don't give myself enough credit. I don't have that for anything. But that's the message that the movie gives out, and that you really, really walk away with is you know, kudos on whatever passion that you have in your life to devote your life to, and go after that, and don't be ashamed of it.
Okay, so where can we find more information on you, learn more about what you're doing, and information on Project Cornlight as well?